You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In 2005, Live Aid concerts and the Make Poverty History campaign put pressure on developed countries to cancel African debts and provide more aid dollars. But chronic hunger continues to affect millions in Africa. The United Nations estimates that 300,000 children risk death from malnutrition in the Sahel region of Central West Africa. The Oakland Institute has recently released the report Sahel, A Prisoner of Starvation. The report examines the 2005 food crisis in Niger to look for the root causes of chronic hunger in the region. Anuradha Mittal is the executive director of the Oakland Institute in California, and with Frederick Mousseau, a co-author of the report. She joins me now by phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
According to your report, 2005 wasn't an isolated food crisis, but rather part of a chronic nutritional emergency in Niger and other African countries. Can you describe the ongoing situation?
Well, actually, Karen, first of all, for our listeners, it might be helpful because in the United States, at least, a lot of people are surprised to hear there's a country called Niger. So just for the listeners, Niger is in the Sahel region of Africa, and that basically includes countries such as Senegal, Mauritania, Mali, Niger, Chad, and Burkina Faso. And as you mentioned, Karen, last year Niger was in the news because of massive starvation. But it is actually, if you follow the United Nations Human Development Index, it was ranked as being the last country out of 177 countries on this index. In fact, 63% of the population is estimated to live on less than a dollar a day, and social indicators are very low. Life expectancy is a mere 44 years. Literacy rate is 17%, and Niger's under-5 mortality rate is the second highest in the world. So it is true, last year, relief agencies such as Doctors Without Borders, Action Against Hunger, administered relief to some 230,000 children who were suffering from malnutrition, and it was in the news. But even this year, Doctors Without Borders have reported that in just one region of Niger, they were providing intervention to some 60,000 children.
What's happening to food production in the country?
Well, actually, in the report that we have done called Sahel, A Prisoner of Starvation, which is a case study of the 2005 food crisis in Niger, what we found is that it's not about food production. It's not that people don't know how to grow food. In fact, in 2004, the food production was only 7% below the national demand. What had happened was that there is no state intervention, the agencies which used to be there to ensure decent prices to farmers for their products, which ensured that the prices are maintained for the consumers. Those agencies have been removed in the name of deregulation of markets. So as a result, the prices have skyrocketed. And so it is more a problem of people not being able to purchase food. So in fact, our study shows that last year during the crisis, a poor farmer in Niger would pay more for a bag of 1 kilogram bag of millet than a European or an American consumer would in the supermarket.
And so with the free market, then it does this limit government intervention in food security?
Oh, definitely. We have seen around the world, and which is very interesting, that all developed countries such as United States have been able to develop their agriculture by providing massive support to their farmers, and actually, I should say, agribusinesses. But the farmers in West Africa have been left, and around the world in third world countries, have been left alone to fend for themselves. So whether it is Bulog in Indonesia, whether it is Edmark in Malawi, or it was the office of which managed the agricultural products in Niger, they have been removed in the name of cutting back, the budgets, in the name of structural adjustment programs, which basically means that the farmers have no protection whatsoever.
Has land use changed with more free market in terms of the crops that are now being grown?
Well, one of the things that our report does mention is that very often, despite the failure of these policies which have come in the name of development to the poorest countries in the world, which are all about focus on free trade, focus on growing cash crops, you do find that people are also, when you look at food security, it is seen as also your cash crops. And our report does say that one of the ways of boosting food security of countries like Niger is to support local efforts which focus on, say, agroforestry. It is the desert region of Africa. It is very important to focus on agroforestry projects, which will have huge environmental implications, but at the same time will provide local crops, traditional crops for consumption by the local people. Also, I think it is time, I mean, our report clearly demonstrates that, that instead of the policies that we are talking about, despite their failure, you know, each year in the last 30 years, we have to start talking about putting small family farmers at the center of development policies. I mean, they constitute 75% of the world's poor, and we know who we have to focus on.
How has the market pressures affected small subsistent farmers and other groups without much economic power?
Well, one of the things that happens is, I mean, it is not just about a food crisis. So if you look at the example of the 2005 food crisis, on one hand, the farmers who have taken loans, they will, you know, when the crop is ready, they will have to give it away for the loans that they had taken. And then when the peak season comes in, they have no crops. So the farmers have given away the crops at dirt cheap prices. And when they themselves need it, they are forced to depend on the prices set by the free market, which means they're paying much more for their crops than because they're unable to save it for the whole year. At the same time, these kind of expenditures are resulting in people, you know, cutting back on other very essential expenditures, such as expenditures on health, on education. And that is why, as I mentioned, in the case of Niger, the literacy rate is only 17%. You look at the malnutrition, as I mentioned, some 230,000 children were last year in these you know, emergency camps run by relief organizations, requiring very in a serious intervention. And despite that, thousands of children died.
How was the national government able to intervene in past food crises that would now go against this free market ideology?
Well, you know, one of the other things that has happened with these new policies, you know, the government has no role in setting the prices or in ensuring that when the prices are going up or there's a shortage, that the prices are maintained for the consumers. Now, in the past, people still talk about it in Niger. The president could send his officials, could send the police to open up the godowns, the granaries of these traders who would make a lot of money. And they would basically, you know, they would get them to open up and share the, you know, crops that they were hoarding and who were planning to sell it at high prices when the need was very high. But today, the government cannot do any such thing. So one of the things, as I mentioned, which was a big cause of hunger, was that the prices had skyrocketed. So the food was there, which was available at high prices. The traders were going to sell it to the one who could afford to pay for it. But the government has been left impotent and cannot do anything because of the deregulation of markets, which has been a part of the strategy that has been given to the country by the World Bank, by the IMF, and the rich donor countries.
Is the government able to set up protective trade barriers?
Well, that's an excellent question, Karen. We have seen around the world when we talk about free trade agreements that the governments basically today are being told that they have no role to play when it comes to ensuring food security of the nations. And one of the key things to ensure food security of our country is to ensure that you have certain kind of restrictions, whether these are tariffs, whether these are, you know, all those agencies that I mentioned before. So in case of Niger, it is the same situation. One of the things that I didn't mention before, it is, again, this whole free market miracle that last year, when the world was talking about massive hunger in Niger, the country was exporting not just cowpeas and, you know, the traditional exports, but they were also exporting cereals to the countries in the region.
Has the international community recognized this chronic emergency situation?
You know, it is very unfortunate, and as we started the show and you mentioned the Live Aid concerts, and last year all of us celebrated the commitments that the G8 leaders made in Scotland about increasing aid to the third world countries, doubling aid to Africa, debt cancellation, and we saw, you know, celebrities on our TV screens, we saw music, and we thought the problem is over. But the problem is that the international community sees 2005 crisis as an isolated crisis. We are ignoring the fact that nearly 300,000 children die each year from hunger-related causes in the Sahel region alone, and these figures are from the United Nations. The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations recently had the World Food Summit, where they acknowledged that they have failed in their goal of reducing the number of malnourished people by half by 2015. In fact, the number of people who are identified as chronically malnourished in the world has gone up to 852 million. I mean, over 260 million of those live in sub-Saharan Africa alone. So I think the international community needs to step back and recognize and look at those development policies which are coming from the West, which are coming from the international financial institutions, which are still about exploiting the resources of third world countries, especially in Africa, which is resulting in massive hunger, starvation, and people have no access and control over their own destiny.
Do you have any other concerns about the way in which aid is given from developed countries to African governments?
Well, again, Niger would be a good case to point out other concerns. I mean, when we think of, for example, aid, when we think of food aid, we think of, you know, starving people and help arriving. Now, in the case of Niger, it was in October 2004 when the government and the World Food Program reached out to the international community and put out the calls of distress that the country will need help. But very unfortunately, and it is very disturbing that there was no response to these calls, and it was not till relief organizations such as Doctors Without Borders got media involved to show pictures of starving children on the screens. It was in July 2005 that the aid finally arrived, almost after 8-10 months of delay. So when the international community even knows, even in the short term, I know aid is not the solution. The real solution lies in the long term things that I was talking about before. But in the short term, when people need aid, first of all, it arrives late. And then there's another huge big problem with countries like United States. United States provided some $19 million of aid, of which $13 million was in-kind food, which means food that is grown in the United States. It is basically a big subsidy to the agribusiness. It is shipped by the U.S. vessels. So it makes it late, expensive, and very devastating for the local community when you have cheap, subsidized food being dumped in the country. So that's another huge, big concern around the aid system.
What recommendations do you have to help alleviate the chronic food crisis in the region?
Well, the report mentions a whole bunch of recommendations. So it is not just about exposing what the situation in Niger and other countries in the Sahel region. But the first one, I mean, in terms of short term, we know that aid needs to be provided when it is needed right away and should be procured locally or regionally as far as possible. But more important, our report focuses on the long-term solutions that to deal with this chronic hunger. The first one is, as I said before, that we have to start focusing on small farmers, subsistence farmers who constitute 75% of the world's poor. And the development policy should be promoting consumption and production of local crops, which are raised by small sustainable farms, rather than encouraging the poor nations to specialize in cash crops. I mean, right now, 78% of countries that report child malnutrition are food exporting countries. We are also talking about development policies should shift away from the free market ideology that has been driving these policies over the last three decades. And we talk about the need for more aid for rural development, and we need to recognize that policies that help the affected countries, you know, develop their own agriculture sector, feed more people and decrease these countries' dependence on aid programs in the long run. And lastly, we are talking about a Marshall Plan for Africa. And we are saying that this Marshall Plan for Africa needs to be unconditional. It could not come with economic conditionalities like open your markets, remove tariffs, and that it needs to be non-paternalistic. We need to let the communities on the ground decide what works best for these, for their communities. And also I would mention, you know, the annual budget of a country like Niger is only $320 million. Annual budget is $320 million. Now, if you look at the money that has been spent in Iraq, over $370 billion by United States alone, we know that we're talking about a drop in the budget, in the bucket.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me today, Anuradha.
Thank you, Karen.
I've been speaking with Anuradha Middle, Executive Director of the Oakland Institute. The report, Sahal, A Prisoner of Starvation, is available online at oaklandinstitute.org. This is Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.